And we are back. Tangy Talks. It's been a couple of weeks, man. Been a couple of weeks, but we are back live with you all here in our studios. But where were we? You were out. I was out. Why don't we start with you? You had a way more fun trip than me.
Both are fun, but yeah, we had a nice little trip over to Italy. My family and I, the first time we traveled with our one-year-old, which was an adventure on its own. Mm-hmm. But we did Italy, which was beautiful. First time ever being there. And we did a little bit of Switzerland as well. We did some Amalfi Coast, the Cinque Terre. We did the Dolomites, which is a beautiful Italian alpine. I mean, I can go on and on. It was just incredible. If you haven't been.
I've never been. So what was your favorite part?
Definitely, I think my favorite part was the Dolomites for sure. I'm a big landscape and outdoors guy. And I've just never seen like glaciers and icebergs and kind of things of that nature. We don't have, I think not here in South Florida, obviously, or, mm-hmm. or here in the United States, but just like going around the mountain and then seeing like a huge, like ice covered mountain. That was like incredible to me. And being up there and just seeing how it was an experience within itself.
Yeah, the only time I've seen that is like in like Yosemite and like the Grand Tetons in Wyoming. Those are pretty cool.
It was incredible. Now I understand Italy and its landscape and its culture and its food. I mean, I don't even talk about the food, which I told you I'm like a little over pasta and pizza, but I wouldn't change it for the world. How about yourself?
I mean, I was in Orlando, so yeah. I got to see the Italian Plaza at Portofino Universal Studios. So that was as close as I got to Italy, but it was fun. I got to actually something interesting. I had to go for a conference, and so I had two nights where we weren't at the park and two nights where we were.
Right.
So we stayed at the cheapest Universal Studios hotel, which was the Dockside Inn, and then we transitioned to the most expensive, which was the Portofino Hotel, because you get these free, you know, unlimited express passes you need to be able to go ride all the rides.
Yeah.
And I was shocked that the Dockside Inn, the cheapest hotel, that's like what starts to compete with vacation rentals. Cause we got this 2-bedroom suite for $120 a night.
That's incredible.
And great pool, food hall downstairs, bar. Like, I thought it was very impressive. I left impressed and I was like, I gotta stay in this cheap hotel. Like, I'm a snob now with hotels. And I was like, this is not going to be very good. So,
but is it
blew me away.
Was it nice? I mean, there was like a takeaway that you got from it.
The takeaway was vacation rentals in Orlando. There's thousands of them that are like 8, 9, 10, 12 bedrooms. But for a family of four, if I were going to go back, I was telling my friend, because he's director of sales for all of Universal Studios. And he was mad at me. I didn't call him. I told him I was really impressed. He's like, yeah, this is like the future that we built. Awesome. 1,000.
Wow.
2-bedroom suites at that place, because there's families like this. So like the parents could have their own room. The kids have their own area. Then there's like a little dining area to use. They have a microwave, refrigerator. So these long-term stays that we've talked about, I stayed in one and I was impressed. I liked it more than the Portofino, which yes, is luxury hotel, nicer linens, better pillows, better bed, but it's just a regular hotel room.
Right.
So
it's incredible, right? I mean, we're always catering to guests, but when we can be guests, we get so much insight and so many ideas. You know, you're saying a couple of things that you saw, but in our hotel, the one that we stayed in for the 10 days, because we were hubbed out of Milan.
Yep.
And there was two takeaways that like caught my eye immediately. I was in the bathroom and off to the right-hand side over the sink, I see like some handheld device and I'm thinking like, oh, what is this? Is this like a little vacuum? I'm like, let me turn it on. It was actually a hair dryer. So it's like a built-in hair dryer that looked nice. And I'm thinking like, you know what? All of our hair dryers here and some of our Airbnbs, they all of a sudden they grow legs every now and then. So I guess that's like a good solution just to lock it in. And it didn't look bad. You'd think like, all right, something like kind of just stuck on the wall. So something maybe you've heard that. And then I know this one, you've mentioned it before and was the first time I'd experienced it, but 4 pillows. 2 were nice and fluff, and then 2 were really, really, really thin. So I thought that was pretty cool. That catered to everybody's
kind of pillows.
Yeah. So
on the beds.
So that's like something I'm like, you know, inexpensive, and we can, you know, instill it into our units immediately. But those are kind of the benefits of traveling, right?
Yeah. What I like seeing too about pillows, now we're getting nerded out on hotels, is like there's a pillow menu at certain hotels, so you can select the pillow
that's
like
the next level,
like with like you like the curve, you like foam, you like feather,
cool.
right? anti-allergen. We'll get there one day.
It's like a pre-check, right? That they would
pre-check,
kind of...
and even you could go down. Like if you didn't like what you saw there, mm-hmm. you could switch it out and get something.
Oh, that's cool. That's next level. I was blown away by just the two options, and now you're taking it to the next level.
Now there. We're talking about hotels on the vacation rental, but it shows you have to know what you're competing against, because it is getting out there where hotels are getting smart now, and they're starting to show like this is what people want. We've talked about it in Miami because that's where we're located.
Right.
Is they've got 8,000 units coming on, and a lot of them have a lot of these amenities. So you got to be ready to compete.
Incredible.
With these hotels. But, you know, we talk about hotels. You were traveling to Europe, and kind of into the news is Barcelona, one of the most traveled to cities in the world, has started to incorporate a ban on short-term rentals. So another big city. We talked about New York City had this, which was like an immediate ban.
Right.
Barcelona is doing it a little bit different, where they're starting to phase out vacation rentals. And by the end of 2029, they plan on not having any more vacation rentals. And I think there'll be a limited amount because it's so expensive to live there now.
Right.
And so you're starting to see that in these big cities where all of a sudden you have a business and no longer do you have one.
Yeah, this topic made me think because I've actually visited Barcelona, and some people would probably say no, but Barcelona gave me a similar vibe to as like Miami Beach, because it's right off of the coast. And then obviously they have like the more, you know, luxury or more newer area. And then they have, you know, obviously like the older part. So it started getting me thinking as far as like why they would ban short-term rental. And it is such a small like area. It's not as big and wide as long as Miami Beach is. So I'm sure, you know, the work, you know, housing was probably being limited. I stayed in an Airbnb, which was extremely small. It was like small. You would go up the stairs with five luggage on you. And it was an mm-hmm. interesting experience. I'll never forget that. But you think about it, right? It's like, all right, those properties maybe are taking away from the people that are working there, you know, and those are most likely more cost-friendly places that the workers can go. So I'm sure they were having to travel from really long time. I think in Barcelona, there's a high season and a low season. So other people are coming from other areas, and they probably have no space to really live in. So I'm sure they're bunking with other friends and stuff like that. So I can see where, you know, that challenge may be and why this decision was made.
Yeah, look, I think it's going to get interesting in big cities because the housing cost is so expensive everywhere. And so Miami is one of those cities, like we're building a lot.
Yeah.
Like if we go outside, I counted the other day walking around, I counted 24 cranes. So there's a lot of buildings going up just in around our offices that will help. And they're building in workforce, but we see it. City of Miami, not big county, but City of Miami is starting to tag homes with violations of illegal short-term rentals. And these are mansions. These are, you know, small homes. We've seen a different mix of them. You know, luckily we are majority in the legally zoned areas with licenses and the right ways to do it. But we tell these owners, like, it is a risk. Like, we have people come to us, and if we were a bad company, we would take this property and say, hey, we'll just make our management fee until you get in trouble. But they're showing us homes that are for sure not allowed. And it's not an easy game when you're not allowed, especially in condo buildings and in certain neighborhoods where you're going to get flagged right away. You have to really know what you're doing. But
100%. Yeah. And as an investor, you know, coming in and bringing your money, I think that's where you start. You know, a lot of people reach out to us. They're like, hey, you know, I'm interested in buying and going into the market. You know, where do I start? And I think that's where you would start, you know, because you have a great property, you have a great, you know, product, it has a pool, it has a great location, et cetera. That's all great. It hits all those check marks. You buy it and then you realize, wait, you know, this is not in a permitted area. So you'd start from there, you know, speak with your realtor. If you are working with one, they have the systems capable. And look at the zones, and they can filter out, you know, those properties that are not in the right zone. And right mm-hmm. there, you know, all right, this is our pool and where we can, you know, begin our search from. And that's a really big help. So I'd say start by there.
Yeah, because each city is different. Every county is different. Every state is different. So just make sure you know those rules and look for those homes that are legally available to do short-term rental. Because the last thing you want to do is get stuck with a place that is not. And the more times we are doing things illegally, this is where cities take these actions, because now there is no place to live. You have people buying up homes and neighborhoods. Like, we look all the time. We can search Airbnb or VRBO or HomeAway and look at the map and see, wow, there's all these homes in an area that these homes are not supposed to be rented out.
So I'm sure if we can do that, they can do that too, right? The city can do that too.
Very easy. But look, we were trying to buy a home for a while and the prices here are crazy. And when you start thinking like, all right, well, that home was an Airbnb and this one's an Airbnb, and you start adding it up, listen, I can see how cities start taking this, and you have to have a plan. So that's why we are a hybrid model now.
Right.
Right. So we can do short terms, which is the traditional, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 nights. We can do midterm, 1 to 3 months to 6 months. And now we can do long term. So we have it all built in.
Yeah.
And so if you're not thinking that way and you don't think it's going to happen to you, it very well could be happening in your city.
Yeah, this one specifically with Barcelona and the topic we're talking about surprised me because it's a complete ban. You know, New York and all these other cities, they, you know, did allow some short-term rentals with, you know, conditions, but they're trying to ban them completely by 2029. No grandfathered in, no anything. So I can imagine if there were investors or people that went to Barcelona market because it's an amazing, you know, location and it always bringing in tourism. Now they're, you know, option B. Let's see what they probably are going to need to do. Either sell it, rent it long term. You know, the options, you know, become a little less when you get a complete ban.
Yeah. I mean, look, the good news is that you have a property. And if you have a good property in the right location, you can always do something with it. But if you were counting on those numbers of the short term rental, you're going to get yourself in trouble. So that's what we advise. Know where you're going to be, know your location, know the laws of where you're going to be, and you'll be in good shape.
A good one.
And talking about laws, we were nervous here in Florida because there was a bill going around, SB 280, that was aimed at putting on strict vacation regulations at the state level, which would take it away from all the individual local governments. And so this was something that we were helping fight with our organization over at Favor. And so we've talked about Favor a couple of times. We're the co-chairs here of that group, helping fight for the rights of vacation rental and short-term rentals here in the state of Florida. And our group did a great job. We were able to rally around and get thousands and thousands of signatures and emails sent over to the governor's office to explain why this isn't the right thing to do. And, you know, people say, well, hotels have to be with certain regulations and rules. Yes, they do. But vacation rentals actually have more regulations on them already than hotels do. And look, we just want to have an equal playing field. And we both come from the hotel world and vacation rental world.
Right.
Right. And so that's something to see. But the good news is, as of yesterday, is Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed the bill and said that he wants to see these things stay in the local regulations of local governments. So there's not all this red tape at the bureaucratic levels and there. Red tape. Yeah. Like, we're trying to get permits for a project that's been taking a year to get. So I can only imagine what it would be if it was at the state level. So what do you think, Victor? How do you feel about this?
And I like that. And I think that, you know, this will help DeSantis in a way. You know, he understood that this is not a one size fits all, you know, regulation, that every city and municipality is different. And it really does show his stand in where, you know, your property rights are important to him. It is your property and you want to have the ability to have that freedom to do with your property, obviously ensuring that you're doing everything legally. So it really surprised me. Every month with Favor, as you mentioned, we were having calls and we, you know, kind of all get together and we talk about this specific issue. And we have in Favor, we have an attorney specific to helping us this with situations like this. He's actually based out in Tallahassee, so he has the ears and has a good pulse. So we were following along as things were happening. We were, you know, communicating with our owners and ensuring everybody was communicating. And then, like Steve said, there was a lot of initiations where we were getting signatures. We even had the emails of some representatives out in Tallahassee that we were sending out emails. So our owners, you know, a lot of our vendors, our team members, you know, signed this bill and they really helped out. So thankfully we can have it vetoed. And I'm hoping that there is something that comes back and that is, you know, makes sense to everyone, but it's not as kind of close. And I mean, they used it themselves as red taped as this bill was.
Yeah, I get it. There's a mixed reaction. I get it. Like, if I bought a nice house in a nice neighborhood and all of a sudden I have a party house next to me,
agreed,
of course, that's what gives the industry a bad name. So, like, agreed, just talking before, like, making sure you do things the right way helps the industry, right? If you're buying in a place in the right zones that are allowed for commercial use, that helps, because I don't want to live it. Like, I live in a condo building. I don't want my neighbor to be doing Airbnb. And they were at one point, and I learned very quickly they were, and reported them because they're not supposed to be doing it in this place. I don't want to live next to that. But if I was in a building that I knew was doing that and I invested in that building because they allowed short-term rental, that's what I bought into. So I think I see the point of people that aren't involved in the industry. And I think that there is a very good way to make sure everyone has the same rules. And I like having rules because then it just shows that here's the game plan. Here's what you need to follow. We can figure out the business. We can advise everyone the right way. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be interesting.
And I like that topic, and you touched on it right away. I mean, there's stuff that you can do at a micro level, you know, within yourself. And, you know, you touched on it that you don't want a neighbor having an Airbnb. But, you know, if that is the case, be a good neighbor, you know, be a responsible host. You know, understand and know your neighbors. You know, a lot of these neighbors sometimes in the properties that you know I'm sure people out there manage don't know who to contact or don't know who to call if there is a nuisance. So what are they going to do? Instinctively, they're going to just dial 911 and call the police and have them, you know, shut down. But if they knew, they could contact the company, they could contact somebody that, you know, we can speak directly to the guests and they don't have to put themselves in any, like, you know, situation or any position that they can, you know, have a bad experience with those people there. And we can go to the property, we can contact those guests, we can, you know, be forceful and say, hey, if this doesn't stop, if you don't, you know, quit what you're doing, we're gonna have to check out. So, you know, be a good neighbor, be a good host, be a responsible host, and put yourself in their shoes. You know, what would you want to see, or what would you want to have as a neighbor if there is a short-term rental next to you? So stuff that you could do at a micro level, right?
Yeah, because that's what it really comes down to, is everyone wants to be able to live and do what they want to do, but just being respectful of everyone. It's the golden rule, right? It's in every single country, every single religion has the golden rule. So treat others how you want to be treated. And just think about others as you're doing this, because you have a responsibility not to let your property become the party house.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how we look at everything. We screen people out, and you may say, well, then I'm not going to get the business. We'll talk about this in a little bit. You do get the business because we do things the right way, and we can talk about this very soon. We are performing very well as a company. So anything else we should share about this topic? What do you think?
No, I think that's it. I mean, if you think of, I've seen like some of the bills and some of the, especially here in the local level, and it always goes back to the neighbor, and they always use this phrase, which I love using internally and then also with our owners, and it's that they use the quality of life. That's like the terminology that they use. Mm-hmm. Ensure that your neighbor can have the same quality of life as you, as your neighbor. So that's like something that you could think about and share with your team, and that'll help them understand a little better.
I agree. And it just shows you laws can change quickly, just like they did in Barcelona, just like they did in New York. Join an organization. If you're doing vacation rentals or short-term rentals, make sure to join Favor. Make sure to join VRMA. Be an active voice to help protect the business, because it shows you it can disappear very quickly.
Yeah, and I love that too. And you just keep saying stuff that I want to dabble in there.
Yeah, go.
Which is a great thing to say. Like I mentioned, we're in these meetings every month in Favor, you know, with our organization that we help and we're chairs to. And they're always, always looking for help. They're always need, you know, we're always putting together organizations or teams for specific, you know, regions or specific projects. And this is something monthly that we discuss, is like, how can we get more people involved? How can we get more members? You know, we don't think that there's people out there that know that there's organizations like this, how we can get that word out. So just join your local organization, join their membership. The one that we're talking about here in Florida, it's $75 to be a member. So it's a great cause. And you have people like us learning and understanding what's going on and any changes, and you're getting notifications, emails, Facebook groups, etc., letting you know in your specific area what are the changes or if there's anything going on. And then we also get together, you know, every quarter, that we try to bring people out here in the specific area, in the South Florida area, and to meet, you know, other people like us and share tips and share ideas. So I think it's a great little promotional for Favor, and I strongly believe in what they're doing and the cause.
Yeah, for $75, if you can't do that, then you got to tighten up the business.
A year, $75
a
year.
Yes,
that's amazing for a lot of information.
Yes, and you'll be able to help influence this business and industry across the state. And talking about doing a good job, man, Tangy Management. So we use a system. We've talked about some of our tech stack, and we're going to give out some of our secret sauce here today. Is we work with a company called Guesty. And we have a monthly call with them.
Right.
And it was impressive because, you know, sometimes we're in our own little world. We know that we're doing the right things, but we have a success manager at this Guesty platform.
Shout out Austin.
Yeah, Austin. If you're listening, we'll send you this clip. Let's clip it. Is, you know, he works with all different people from across the country and saw that. He's like, man, you guys really are crushing it. Your occupancy is great. Your average nightly rate is great. The way you use the system with notes and sharing and communication, and how quickly you respond to guests and really treat them well and use the owner tools is outstanding. He's like, because I talk to so many people out there and they're struggling. Why is my occupancy low? Why am I not making the sales I need to make? And we thought he was, you know, just,
yeah, like, just boasting, maybe making us feel good. But no, he was.
Yeah, he was like, no, actually it is. And so we thought, you know what? Why don't we tell some people what we're doing instead of just saying, hey, we're doing such a good job. Why not share some of the tips? But why don't you start? What are some things that we're doing that are
The four things that he touched on, and you know, kind of just to start off that call we have every month, and we do this once a quarter. He basically said, like, look, I've been doing this for about 2 weeks. I review all of the company's numbers, and these are sometimes difficult calls to have because, you know, you see the performance is not there and you have to deliver that to that, you know, property manager or that owner of that company. So he said he was pleasantly surprised and happy to see that our scores, and that he knew that that conversation with us was going to be a much better one. So we were happy to see, you know, I was like, all right, I'll take the pat on the back. But there was four things specifically that he mentioned that we are doing better than some of our competitors. You know, the first one he touched on was communication, the efficiency and how quick we are answering guest messages. So we're averaging at around 5 to 7 minutes in response time to guests, where he said, you know, he sees other competitors at 15, 20 or above. So, you know, we used to, I think I've shared this kind of clip or this idea before, but we used to stand in our hotel meetings in the morning when we would start our lineup. And our boss, one of our bosses, his name is Buck, he would basically just start the meeting and then just go quiet, silent. And he would just wait for 1, 2, 3 minutes. And we would all kind of look at each other and say, like, what's going on? I don't understand. Why are we just sitting here in silence? And then he would stop immediately, look at his watch, and he's like, all right, 2 minutes passed. That's how long the guest, you know, this morning had to wait for a room key. That's how long this guest had to wait for a response. So that always kind of stuck to me and made me think about what we're doing now specifically. You know, that's 5 minutes that if a guest has an issue, they're being, you know, have an answer or getting a response to. And it every minute counts, right? When it's somebody stuck in the front door and can't figure out how to get in, or wants to turn on something and can't because they're, you know, their family is waiting for a dinner. So that one stood out to me immediately.
Communication.
Communication.
Communicating with guests very quickly.
Very, very quickly. And then I guess a tip for that, I mean, I want to share the secret completely and kind of just tell everybody specifically what we're doing. So before, and I know this is very common, before there's companies that have guest communication teams built already in the company that you hire this company, and then they have all of these other agents working and, you know, answering your messages. But what I notice and what we notice is that this company is working with us, but so, you know, their company also is working with other management companies. So that means that these guest service agents are communicating not only on your behalf for your management companies, but for other management companies. So that's different processes, different things that they have to learn individually. So what do? We went directly to the source and hired individual team. So we weren't hiring a company. We, you know, did interviews like if it was an internal team, and we interviewed several candidates, and we have 5 really, really good communications agents that have been trained and have been guided and have all processes and work solely for us. You know, that entails obviously paying a little better, you know, having a lot of benefits. One of the little things that we do, and I've been going on here, a little rant. One of the things we do is we have our sharpshooter award that Steve came up with, that it's awesome and it's a great incentive. And basically it's every month we're giving our team a little bonus to whoever answers the messages the quickest and most efficient and accurate. So we call that the sharpshooter award.
Yeah, we can track it. We use our tools.
Our tools.
We know our data. And so we hired internally all of our team members, and it's a tremendous amount of messages that you don't realize. It's thousands of messages, not even a month, per week, per day is hundreds. And it comes in all the time because guests have so many questions about all these different homes. So you have to train the people on your homes. But the payoff of doing this is you're getting much higher guest service scores. You're getting repeat guests because they know you're taking care of them, and your reviews are on point. So we have so many guest favorite homes that are labeled on the booking channels and super hosts that Airbnb does because of our guest experience. We're able to get their message, respond, and also have an action. All right. So then we have on the boots or boots on the ground team that can take that message and say, all right, the AC is not working, and have a plan on how to get there, or the pool isn't how I want it, or this chair broke, or something happens. There's always something happening every day. I was looking at our our tickets today. The tickets is all the things that we have to address. We got a ton, but they're being checked off as we speak to you all right now because the team is trained to do it.
So that was the second one. And we just discussed the second one that really stood out was the overall review score throughout the year. And we were sitting at around a 9.5, which is amazing. Out of 10, even at a hotel, I think that's a great score. So that, you know, entails right away score. From what you are referring to. So that was number two. Then number three was our occupancy percentage.
We won't give our exact occupancy, but we'll just say that it's above the average and at the highest level because we're doing something unique. And so a lot of people use a tool. There's a couple out there that says dynamic pricing, and they put a price and they set levels and it automatically does its thing. We actually do that, but then we take it a step further and look at it twice a week in meetings. So we have revenue meetings Tuesday and Thursday, but then we look at it every single day and all the reservations we get. So if a certain property gets a reservation, we say, all right, we got some reservations coming through here. Then we tweak that price either up or down based off of how that property is performing.
And that part is happening daily.
Every day.
Having those meetings twice a week that we're discussing pacing and we're looking at individual properties, but the changing and altering and ensuring that the rates are where they need to be, that's happening daily. So I'm not sure what other companies are doing, but you know, that's something that, you know, you should definitely look at daily. And then another thing that we do specific to our company is we're also looking at hotels, occupancy, hotel reports as well, and seeing how they're doing, because there's a, you know, there is a correlation to that, but it's just so important and using the tools, like you mentioned, and Guesty has great analytics tool that we built in.
Yep.
And then we have a score card that we look at all the time that is showing us how many new reservations, how many cancellations.
Yep.
You know, where we are weekly, you know, what is our break-even point weekly? And if we're getting there or we're exceeding, that's, you know, that goes green and that's, you know, tells us that we're doing well. So that's how specific and how intricate and detailed we're looking at, you know, all of our rates. So,
yeah. So if you're not doing that, there's a lot of us use different technology, but we're not using them to the fullest. So make sure you know everything that those tools can do, because most people are not understanding the full capability of the tools they have and just set it and forget it. And that's how you can be good. You'd be an average company, but if you want to outperform like we do, we have set meetings. We know what we need to achieve every single week with set goals for each property, know what each owner needs to hit to have their own break even at each property so that we're striving to hit their goals too. And then we meet with every owner every month to go through how they did and how they performed and ways to continue to improve, because if they crushed it this month, what else could we add? Could we add, take some of those revenue wins and get a pool table and add an arcade system and do some other things for the guests? So
I love it.
There's a lot of things that we can do out there. We covered a lot. So to go over it one more time, make sure you're checking on how you're giving that guest experience. Are you getting with them very quickly and then answering their needs or questions and then meeting them in person to actually get it fixed? If you can do that, you'll have high scores, repeat guests. If you want to get your occupancy and average nightly rate up, you got to look at your pricing daily. It's not I'm going to set it and I'll come back to it at the end of the month to see how we did. It's an everyday thing and have a plan for it and then make sure to know how to use your technology. So those are our tips for today, because we felt like we wanted to share our success with you all today. And I can't believe we're flying through here already on this podcast.
Yeah, we had a lot to cover. That's 2 week hiatus that we just had all of this kind of built up to share with everyone.
And by the way, if you were listening last podcast, we were heading out to Top Golf, and what happened? This guy was talking trash and I beat him. I won. So I think I'm gonna get out and be a Top Golf expert.
Now we gotta go to a real golf course.
Oh, yes, now he's got new rules. Now I'm gonna go out to the real golf course and do the same thing.
It did happen. I was there to witness it, and it was still burns.
On the first swings on video, goes, oh, what's that? What's happening?
You didn't tell me you took lessons before. I was not expecting that. I was like, wait a minute, that's a really good swing.
Yeah. So you see, don't underestimate this guy. He'll come out there. But anyhow, it was fun. I love being back on the air with all you on the podcast. Hopefully the tips and news are always helpful to you. And if you want to hear anything, make sure to send it to us on our website at tangymgmt.com. And until next time, make sure to subscribe, leave a note, share this with someone that you think might find value in it. And we'll see you next week.